Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, this post covering finance and property news. Monday evening, Edwin's back. And Edwin, what to talk about this week?
There certainly is, Martin, and it's the year of the horse, and all I can say is giddy up. Let's get on with it. And it's going to be an exciting race to the end. 2026 is going to be a wild race. It's better than the Melbourne Cup, I reckon. It's going to be one of those long journeys for a lot of the industry, buyers, sellers, investors, the government. I mean, it's but the government is a gift that just keeps on giving.
Yeah, well, the English PM was over in China and was presented with a statue of a horse, and I think there was a bit of confusion as to what it related to. But yeah, it's the year of the horse. And as you say, let's giddy on up. And I tell you what, this week is going to be an interesting week. Of course, we've got the RBA decision tomorrow, and there's a certain degree of speculation now that maybe interest rates will go up. I'm a little bit more sanguine. I think it's possible that they might signal the risk that interest rates go up rather than actually putting them up. But it's fascinating to see just how much the probability of a rate cut has changed to a rate rise now. And I don't know whether you saw this, but the latest probability is now 67% expectation of a rate rise. The ASX 30 is now above 4%. And that's quite interesting in terms of, the trajectory of interest rates looks as though it could well be going in a different direction from maybe where people wanted. In fact, Warren Hogan, in his latest article, suggests only 100 basis points of rate hikes would be equivalent to get inflation under control. So he's thinking that we may see rates a lot higher. If it is, that's a real pressure pain point. I actually made a show yesterday called It's D-Day for the Australian Economy, which is running quite well, which I went through some of these issues, because there's a lot of uncertainty, of course, in people's minds at the moment. But I want to highlight again two things. One, a rate rise is not yet certain. It's probable, but not certain. But the other is, with the volatility in other asset classes at the moment, it's fascinating to me how many people are saying, well, I'm going to get out of my Bitcoin, which is down, or I'm selling silver, which has gone up dramatically, but now wobbling. In fact, I spoke to a couple of people last week who sold silver just before it started to fall. What are they thinking of putting money into? Property.
Well, and that's a $64 billion question as to what's going to happen with all those asset classes. What are people going to do? As I keep on referring to that, group of people, is your desperate housewives that are, look at the partners investing and storing away and wanting to get higher. Chasing the 150,000, 200,000 Bitcoin pricing and 6,000 in gold and all this. I mean, that's all good and fine based on the narratives and the conversations that you hear all around the world. The fiat this, the fiat that. But at the end of the day, people are looking for security. People are looking for stability, and even investors, because of the volatility, as you said, Martin, I would dare say, that 80% of the people are going to be looking for that safer haven, regardless of the conversation around rate rises. In my opinion, one or two, it's going to put a lot of stress on the local home buyers that are wanting to step into the market for the first time. But those that are already in the market and those that that have got investment properties in the market, I don't really believe a lot is going to change, other than they're just going to readjust the belts and tighten the belts and go through that mortgage pain and mortgage stress that we often talk about. But we're going to talk a little bit more as to whether or not that's going to relate into property listings and historically what that's done. When I say historically, I'm looking only over the last couple of 2-3 years. They're the other questions. But the fundamental principle for me and for our team is goes back to, we're not a very big market. And as I've been sharing with some people abroad, and comparing the markets with the Century 21 offices in Hong Kong, and talking to the Century 21 offices in China, the senior delegates there, and we're comparing the as we shared last week, one city alone has 230,000 registered homes or properties for sale that are listed on the portals, and then probably another 30,000-40,000 that aren't, and that's just one city. Whereas, in terms of when you compare it to Sydney as a major capital city of Australia, we're shadowed by those numbers. And then when you've got everything else that is happening around the world, and the potential concerns that that people have of, and one of the predictions that I have there on the 10 predictions that we released earlier this year, and that is if things heat up in the Asia Pacific region, we've got a lot of expats, and we've got a lot of money from PR holders, people that hold PR and have gone back to the Asian countries. We'll have a lot more interest in our property markets. Albeit the only one that's bucking the trend is Melbourne, but that's another that's another kettle of fish that they stand on their own based because of the government policies. So look, it's questions, data points that we'll be asking, answering. We'll be informing our followers and our viewers of the data points that we see, what we see, where we see, but. In Sydney, in terms of the pressure points, the appetite is still there. Although the mainstream push the narrative of the high clearance rates, but they don't talk about the fact that it's the lowest volumes on record for many years, and the trend of for sale listings via auction or by auction means is dropping, and we're going to talk about that as well. They don't talk about that, but look, at the end of that, it's that hype that keeps on even the locals motivated. But as we've also been looking at the very important data point, it's that it's that range around the million. Where your first-time buyers are wanting to come in, or just below the million for those freestanding homes that are out in the outskirts of the Sydney region and a little bit beyond that are of interest. Other than that, what other choice do first-time buyers have, whether it be townhouses, villas, or otherwise?
Yes, you had a little of a wobble there. I think the Elon program might be a little bit off key. I'm not sure, but anyway, yes, I certainly got the gist of what you said, and absolutely right. There are some significant pressures on people, but also a lot of interest in property. It's interesting, the latest data that I shared with the newspapers over the weekend got published, and this, for example, showed the Queensland story, and they actually quoted me quite extensively talking about first-time buyers, a patchwork of households with some with no debt, some with manageable debt, others over their heads. Young growing families, of course, exposed, little income growth, a lot of pressure on households, and also a lot of other debt too, which is quite an interesting little story and angle here. So, of course, the debt pressure on some people is really quite significant at the moment. And, they sort of did talk a little bit about, what to do about it, and they went into some detail on a suburb-by-suburb basis. So that was quite an interesting little bit of exposure ahead of that event tomorrow with the RBA. But I think the thematic here is that the property demand is still very strong, and it's going to continue. Not universally so, and not everybody, of course, can participate. There are some people who have been caught with the high debt loads, as I've covered many, many times. But I think the other thing to think about, Edwin, is if you are thinking about buying property, it's really, really important to, as we always say, think about the situation locally. And we spoke about, 18 months ago, about the issue of building on floodplains. And it's fascinating to me that finally, the newspapers have caught up with us. So there were these articles here. The government warned homes on this floodplain would put lives at risk. Then it approved 960 of them. Or this one here, milestone deal for 100,000 first homes target. That's the earlier, a little bit of a coverage on that. Financial Review, a previously unreleased Deloitte report commissioned by Housing Australia found its high-risk approach to doling out billions of dollars in funds. And, yeah, as we said, yeah, we covered this 18 months ago, 12 to 18 months ago. Building on floodplains, not smart, is it?
No, and this is what we call, you know, this segment, the gift that keeps on giving by government plans, incentives, proposals, handouts, and all the shenanigans that go on. It's incredible to see, and when you start looking at those conversations and those stories that are published, how the government, whether it be a state government or federal or local government, how they're getting caught out. Because it's really, a lot of it's really announceables, and they don't make a lot of sense. And when you start really drilling into what they're saying, you look at the milestone deal where they want to give up, what is it, $800 million or so to the South Australian government to build 17,000 homes. When you start really breaking that down and you start doing the numbers on that story, then you find out that $300 million is going to go to relocation of sewer treatment plants or whatever they're going to do with that. So there are at least $500 million left. But when you start doing the maths, they're telling us, or they're telling the general public, because they think that we're stupid, that they can build homes outside of buying the land or outside of the land acquisition and preparing the land for the developments for the construction. They're saying that could build homes roughly around the $30,000 mark. I mean, you can't build a granny flat these days for under $200,000. That's a two bedroom granny flat. So, but the government's telling us that they're going to build 17,000 homes, in that region. But and then the Australian Financial Review starts questioning the policies that got bought out months ago with regards to the gifts. The gifts, the policies, the guarantees, the deposit guarantees, the 5% schemes, and everything else. And then you've got state governments that get caught out. And as Colin, Colin_M85, tagged us on that post and reminded us and said, "Hey guys, didn't you talk about some time ago?" Said, "Yeah, and a lot of other things that have been happening that." We have been alluded about even before they became mainstream media news because of our insiders in different regulatory bodies, our insiders in different government departments and HIA and so forth. And this is where we are. So this is why people like to watch our show, because we are ahead of the curve. And it takes the mainstream quite a few months to catch up on what we say and what we put out. So it's interesting, it's fascinating. That's why the government, I think 2026 is going to be very much one of those gifts that just keeps on giving, because a lot of what they've been saying and what they've been trying to do and not doing, more to the point, just centers around announceables, centers around committees. Committees, new departments that have been created that spend most of the money that they've earmarked to build affordable housing, to build government subsidised housing, and anything of the like. But at the end of the day, the proof's in the pudding as to where show me the final product. Show me when not only one individual in Bankstown gets a key to a 17 unit block, when they've been talking about hundreds of thousands have been being built and developed for affordable housing, but they make a big song and dance out of giving the key to one individual because certain apartments got finished or completed. So the numbers just don't add up, Martin, and it's. Yeah, how much more of this can the local community put up with? Can the younger generation put up with before they start voting with their feet and putting the governments to task? We'll see in the next upcoming federal, state elections. We'll see if there are changes, but we'll also see how many more promises they make in order to buy the votes, and we'll see how it tracks on. But until we start seeing the machines really moving, and until we start seeing cranes coming up, popping up like they were popping up in the 2014, 2015, there's not going to be a lot of change. First and foremost is until you start changing the policy around immigration, you've got no way of dampening the appetite that is out there, the demand that has been created out there because of the population increase. And investors are always going to go, as we said earlier on, they're going to go head to head with first-time buyers, especially in the lower price range.
Absolutely. And we are seeing this contention. The latest reports again showed that prices were moving more firmly in the area where, of course, those new grants and the 5% deposits, first-time buyers, all were coming in. So there's a lot of interest, precisely the same as some of the property investors who are interested. So that's part of the problem. The supply, of course, of property is all over the place at the moment. And we're also, of course, seeing more failed builders still going to the wall. And when I talk to those in the industry, they're finding it harder and harder because the costs are still rising. So there's a real big contention there. So, yes, it's a real mess. But the politics of it is, well, say one thing. The reality is, it's something very different. And I do think that a lot of people are still being misled. What can you do? I mean, look at Melbourne. You know, prices in Melbourne are still looking pretty weak, right? Maybe they should push the emergency button. And, well, you know, you made this this tweet. I must say you were a little bit naughty when you did it, but wow.
Yeah, well, I think the only way to stop the carnage there in Melbourne with property prices is if we lock it down. And stop people from escaping the SMEs and the investors that are paying high amounts of tax on their investment of property investment portfolios down there, and also you've got your superannuation funds and a lot of private investors that are heavily tied up with land, and this is where government policies really push them out. So yeah, look, I'm one to think we need to lock it down, and they have the reason. I don't know whether locking New South Wales is going to have the same effect. I don't believe it will. I think it'll have the opposite effect. But hey, Melbourne are on their own, unfortunately. So let's lock it down and stop the exodus. Because there's a lot of movement. I'm hearing more and more of especially around the commercial and industrial areas in the what we spoke about last year, what would happen in the southwest fringes of Sydney, where in one particular instance, one of the mechanics that I speak with regularly, I was encouraging him to buy the complex that it was renting at the time. So this is just 12 months ago. You could have bought it for just around $3 million. The owner of the complex was asking 3.2. And on Friday, I found out now that the price is at 3.8. Why? Because of the demand for that type of, because of, again, like I said, there's going to be a lot of movement in that space in your southwestern regions of Sydney because it's a lot cheaper, and people have woken up to the fact that there is a migration from the small industry from Melbourne to New South Wales, or from Melbourne to Sydney, or from Victoria to New South Wales because of those government policies.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to watch and see how this all plays out. But interestingly, of course, talking about the Victorian end of things, there's some interesting changes there about the reserve rules and relating to auctions and to whether it's going to have an impact, what impact it will have. half of Victorian sellers say new auction reserve rules will not work, according to the Herald Sun, which is quite interesting. And a quarter also indicated they would reconsider putting their homes to auction if the proposal passed in its current format. So there you go. Now, how much of this is spin? How much of this is real, Edwin?
Well, look, the thing is this, Martin. Even if we took the article at face value, right? If we took the article at face value, we're getting a 50% are disgruntled, and the other 50% of the industry aren't. So it's a 50-50 call. So, you know, in my opinion, it could be taken as a move in the right direction if 50%, like, you know, so there. But one of the things that the article points out is that they're saying that, you know, the half that's upset are now upset because buyers are more likely to be in control. Well, you know, you've had the control for so many decades. Let's give the other side a bit of a chance, right? Yeah. So, what's your problem? So, you know, in the article it says I think that where that leaves the government is in that they need to have more conversations with the industry, and they have to be sure that whatever they take to the final draft doesn't overly favour one part of the market. Hold on a minute. It's been favouring one part of the market for decades on end, and now you're whinging and bitching and complaining about the fact that it could favour buyers. So, in my opinion, I think it's a move in the right direction for those that are looking at buying. What that translates is, hey, the half of the industry is upset because now they're going to have to work a little bit harder for their crust. Or for the commission, because as I've been saying for many, many years, that one of the major premises for agents to take property to auction is because it's a shorter, quicker campaign to put the commission in the pocket and move on to the next deal. Yeah, well, that's my opinion. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think, yes, auctions are for the benefit of the agents rather than actually for the vendors. And I think that there has to be a swing back to a more fair and sensible approach. Now, okay, you know, you've got to try and seek out what the market price is at any point in time, and there are different ways of doing it. But the way that the auctions are run at the moment, the decks are stacked against. And, you know, we've highlighted this for many years, that the auction system is not very effective. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. But as you say, people are in the industry saying, oh, it's not very fair because it's working against us now rather than for us. Well.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, man, who bought it on them? They bought it on them themselves. The industry's bought it on themselves because they couldn't step outside of the dirty little tricks. They couldn't, go down the path of open transactions. They always want to have it their way, and the industry's bought it on themselves. One of the original discussions that George and myself had with the REI president of Victoria, that was in back in 2013 when. I think it was 2012 or 2013, when there was an AFR article, and George and I were quoted on the AFR article saying, you know, like when he blamed the shenanigans on the vendors, but yet the vendors aren't the ones that take the property to auction. It's the so-called professionals, the agents that would, you know, take properties to auction, and they're the ones that the vendors are being led by the professionals' advice. As to, you know, how they approach it. And but at that time, Enzo was the president at that time, and he was quoted as saying, you know, don't blame the agent, blame the vendors. I mean, it was silly stuff. So we've got over a decade in New South Wales, I've been talking about the shenanigans that go on with the auction campaigns for, you know, a decade and a half, if not more. Where I've been challenging the industry, you know, to get themselves, you know, in order. And how many regulatory changes do we really need in order to bring that to bring that method of sale into order. There've been regulatory changes, there've been legislative changes, there've been think tanks by with the New South Wales government, where the main industry bodies to have a leading role in the think tank have been auctioneers. So I mean, what do you expect? it's all about let's do less to get more and get a quicker result. That's the unfortunate thing, but I believe that message is going, is getting through to the New South Wales people, and our followers and our viewers, and they're making a big impact in the overall scheme of things because they're being educated that auction campaigns are not the best method of sale to achieve the best result all the time, as the mainstream media tries to paint it out, and as the industry tries to paint it out. It just gives you, because you know. And a lot of the properties are sold prior to auction. So if there's so much demand, right, if there's so much demand, why sell it so quickly? That's, you know, one of the questions that I keep on asking a lot of people, and there's no real answer to it. But we know the truth. We know where it gets to. But look, and if you want to look at a true data point, you just got to look at the auction demand and the auction campaigns, how they've been trending downwards in Sydney. So you know, I believe it's the consumers, being the vendors themselves, the consumers are waking up to it. That's what I think, and hence the reason why you got a 50-50 call. Even the industry itself is sort of, you know, if you were to say that 60% or 70% of the industry were opposing, well, we got a 50-50 stalemate down there in Melbourne. So what does that tell you? Even the industry itself is starting to speak against the shenanigans that have been going on, and they're starting to say to themselves, you know what, I think it's time that we should bring our house into order as well, and rather than getting caned for the shenanigans that the few and everybody gets blamed.
Yeah, well, we'll watch and wait. I think it's certainly very true to see, as I'm having one of the conversations, that more people are more skeptical about the auction route. They're actually not necessarily being convinced by the arguments that the agents put forward. And it is fascinating to see that now there are more people who don't want to go to auctions when they're prospectively buying, because they actually don't believe they're going to get a fair crack of the whip. They talk about underquoting. They talk about, the people bidding in the back who perhaps don't really want to buy in the first place. So all of those things, I think, are in play. So watch this space. I think it's very interesting to see how this plays out. And as we get into the numbers later in the show, there are some surprising issues that we can touch on then. Now, just going back to what I talked about earlier on, the debt problem, you actually selected another article for us to talk about too, and this is actually the Sydney story. So again, this is the bombshell study, which is basically talking about the debt problem. Mass of households have over $1 million in debt, and they're talking here about again the analysis that we did. Of course, I'm talking here about credit cards, car loans, mortgages, buy now, pay later, a lot of debt, and a lot of people, of course, have a lot of debt. But again, it's interesting, of course, that a lot of this stuff is, a bit partial in the way that it's being reported, right? What I said was, there are a bunch of people who are doing fine. They're fine. They've hardly got any debt. Might have a mortgage, but it's easy serviceable. There are other people who have quite a lot of debt. But there are some people who are digging themselves quite a deep hole because they're actually leveraged up with a big mortgage, particularly first-time buyers. And then they're finding their cash flows are under pressure and they're having to grab, effectively, other types of credit, buy now, pay later, personal loans, et cetera, et cetera. And in fact, the official statistics showed there was a bit of growth in credit. Again, property investing growth lending is up as well. So the debt issue is quite fascinating, but we should pose the question, if in fact so many people were actually in significant debt pressure, which is what I'm seeing, why aren't they actually selling? And the answer is, they're not. And the reason they're not is because they've got no option but to continue to do what they do. because there is no alternative. You know, they can't move into the rental sector. And if they were to sell and to try and buy something cheaper, that wouldn't necessarily solve their problem too. And until recently, my analysis was, Edwin, that a lot of people were expecting rates to get cut and wages to grow in real terms. And so magically it would sort of work out. Of course, as we discussed at the top of the show, maybe the RBA will actually spoil that party too. So what's your take on all this?
Well, look, it is an interesting scenario. Look, I look back at the at previous market downturns, and I mean, I'm talking about like let's call them market crashes. And one of the first was, you know, again in the early 2000s, where property just went, you know, like we just went downhill. I mean, at that time, I was working with Remax in St. Mary's, and we were watching, you know, it was live. Properties go down in value by $5,000-$10,000 a week. I myself had sold, you know, apartments in Westmead. I can't remember the name of the street there. Myself and my team at the time that I was working with, we sold 5 apartments in Westmead, and we just had holding deposits, which are not, it's just a holding deposit. Doesn't really mean a lot, big deal unless contracts are signed. And we got those deposits on the Thursday, Friday. On Saturday, Sunday, there was a newspaper article, Dildum, you know, a couple blocks down the road, built we're finishing off the 3-4 towers that are built right next to the hospital there. And they dropped their prices from $380,000 to $320,000 over the weekend. And our properties that we sold them for around $340,000 on behalf of our client. And I mean, our purchasers just, you know, pulled the pin on ours. I mean, this was my one of the first. So, you know, at that time, there was a surplus of property. There was more, you know, more inventory than demand, and yeah, people could walk away. What turned that whole market? I remember it pivoted on a story that I can't remember the actual publication, but the big post was how a young family bought a house in Blacktown, and in the Blacktown LGA somewhere. They were saying they bought the property from memory for around $320,000 or thereabouts, or $360,000, $360,000. But then they were up to their eyeballs in debt. But in that photo, what you saw in the photo in the publication was there was a brand new Holden in the driveway as well, right? And when you start digging deeper, there's another brand new car in the garage, and yeah, there's a plasma TV just about in every, you know, every living area of the house. And back the TVs were worth, you know, $15,000-$20,000 for these new big TVs that people were around. So it wasn't so much the debt of the property that made them come unstuck. It was the ancillary debt post purchasing of the property. In other words, you know, the equity that they so-called started to build, that they started pulling down on. So we've got, I believe, in a lot of these the situation that we've got now. When you look at the article, it talks about in the surveys that this reporter did there, and it talks about, you know, people that bought property 10 years ago. So if you bought property 10 years ago, and you compare the prices from 10 years ago to now, I mean, there's a lot of equity, and a lot of people are in that mortgage stress, not so much because of the debt burden of the value of the property, but you're in that mortgage stress because of the extras that you pull down, like you said, and like you said yourself, yeah, the credit card, the holiday trips, the extra cars. I mean, you only have to go down certain neighborhoods of Sydney, even in the western suburbs, where you've got $250,000 SUVs parked, you know, not only one but two parked outside their homes. And you know that that's all about equity, and you know, it's so The question for me is the debt that they're burdened with, how true is that aligned with the actual original purchase of the property as to the extra thing that they've got on top of, right? That's one thing. So in that scenario, I'll say, well, bad luck. That's your problem. But for the new first-time buyers that have been jumping in over the last 3 or 4 years, that's where you got to really feel sorry for. That's where you got to empathize with because of the government policies and the government schemes that have pushed them into pushed. Remember, it wasn't too long ago where we were talking about ranges in the in your affordable areas where first-time buyers would jump in. That we were talking about your $750,000 to $850,000 ranges. That's 2 years ago. Dial it forward to now from then, and now we're talking about the affordable ranges of your 1.2 to 1.5 million. That's a big jump. And when wages haven't kept up with your debt burdens, but yet this is where the first-time buyers are looking into. So, and of course, there's all the other the demand issues and your and the fight that first-time buyers have to have with investors that are chasing the same price points as well. So you've got all these scenarios playing out. So why haven't we seen a lot of the so-called people that are in mortgage stress? As you said, Martin, one of the primary reasons is they've got nowhere to go. They've got nowhere to go. And I guess the other question to that is if we started seeing a lot more distressed sales, they've because of the demand and because of the sheer numbers being very small in relative in comparison to historical years, and when you start comparing it to the demand, that's the question is are they gonna lose much or lose any at all? We've seen historically in the last 2, 3 years when people have been posting mortgage in possession sales. When I've myself attended mortgage in possession sales around the western suburbs, around your Marylands, Fairfields, Guildfords, and that one of from even 2 years ago where homes have gone for astronomical numbers. But there's because there's not a lot of stock on market, so there's not a lot of choice. And everything else comes into play as well. So I believe that in a sense, people are going to be, we're going back to that discussion that we had with Louis Christopher a few years back. And that was people are, and that cheeky post that I put up on X at the time is people are going to be getting rid of their perhaps even their holiday homes and the mistresses before they put the principal place of residence up for sale.
Yes, and I think also it's worth highlighting the fact that if you've had a property for some time, you've got equity. People are drawing down more equity from their property to increase the mortgage, and that gives them more flexibility. And the other point there, of course, is that for many people, they've got to have the cars because they're living in the outer suburban areas. There's no public transport, and so to get around, you need, so there's a whole lifestyle question here. Which I think is worth reflecting on, that people are actually perhaps are more accustomed to higher levels of debt. They get used to living under very significant debt levels. Doesn't make it very comfortable. And it's interesting that there was an article from the ABC highlighting the fact that the rate rises, if they come, will be a bitter pill for those struggling with the costs of living. And it's fascinating when you look at this in more detail. Financial Counselling Australia's CEO talks now about it's not just us on low incomes doing it tough. She says calls the National Debt Helpline from employed middle-income Australians have been on the rise, and they are seeing a return to pre-pandemic levels of requests for support. And it's interesting that they said 44% of people who are calling in are employed on an income and are still struggling to make ends meet, which is what I'm seeing in my surveys. And it's interesting also that they say that often by the time people reach out to financial counsellors experiencing high levels of financial stress, the levels of mental health impact and psychological stress also incredibly high, and people are skipping medical appointments and meals and doing other things to try and make ends meet. And that's really the point. There is a significant consequence for this high level of debt. But as you say, people are caught in the corner, and in some cases they're able to muddle through with the bank's help, extend and pretend, as I call it, refinance, or just grabbing more credit. But it's not impacting at the moment a significant spike in terms of listings. Now, if that changes, we're in a whole new world of pain. But at the moment, a lot of people who are selling, if they're forced to sell, are selling with equity because prices are still quite high. If we started to see prices start to come down, then we'd have a game.
Yeah, but look, Martin, you've got to look at this. Okay, I'll just off the top of my head, right? So 2 years ago, you could buy King's Landing. You could buy in King's Landing for 950 to, let's say, between 950 and 1.1. Now, the entry point in King's Langley is 1.5. That's for a shitty home. That's for almost land value. What happens, and then if they improve the property a little bit, or if you're in the school catchment area, it'll still sell for between 1.6 and 1.7. The renovated or newer style properties that had a big renos to it, and they've had extensions. I mean, we're talking 2.2 million dollar sales in King's Langley now. So what happens is, there you've got people, let's say somebody's forced to sell because they're in so much debt, so much pressure. But as we said, they've pulled out that they've made a gain, and they'll go to closer to Blacktown CBD, or yeah, they'll go to South Blacktown, and they'll buy into South Blacktown at 1.3, where 2 years ago you could buy for 850-900. But for them, 1.3 is cheap because they're coming down from a 1.7 sale. So if you extrapolate that across a lot of areas, a lot of suburbs in the Sydney region, and this is the effect. So then moving further out, going to the outskirts of the Sydney region, north, south, east, or west, you're inflating the prices of those areas. So in turn, then that bolsters the price of where you just sold. So this is why, because there is not a lot. Because the demand is just so high, right? So when you've got that high demand and low volumes on stock, I mean, it's economies of scale. So then you've also got the investors are the ones that are going to be feeling more the pinch in rate rises. But guess what? The investors will pass that on, but we're not seeing how that is passed on to the rentals. Mm. So the ones that are really more under pressure, are the tenants, are the rental side of the equation, which the mainstream don't pick it up because they're not seeing the bonds, the deposit bonds renewed. Because you don't renew your deposit bond when you get a rental increase. The deposit bond stays as is. So if you've started your rental 3 years ago and it was $500 a week, but now you're paying $800 a week, it doesn't mean that you top up your bond. It just stays from 3 years ago. So the data or the data points that the mainstream economists go on by, it doesn't capture the rental increases. And if it's very, very minimal. And that hence the reason why you don't get a lot of stories about around it. So they're the ones that really suffer, are the renters. And the investors suffer up until the point where they can then lodge a rental increase if they're within the prescribed times and within the prescribed lease arrangements. But the renters are the ones that pay for it at the end of the day. But whilst you've got this scarcity or this shortage of property, in my opinion, the numbers have got to pretty much go a lot higher than even 50%, closer to 100% to what we've got now, in order for any of this thing to put a dent in in the current market that we have in the Sydney region. A lot of the bumps, I'll call them bumps, is just the emotional reaction to mainstream media, because a lot of people sell under a lot of emotion, and a lot of people buy under a lot of emotion. So a lot of it's just the emotional hiccups until the people start saying shit. It's not really what the mainstream are saying. But the question is, will be moving forward, is 2026 going to be the going to buck the trend of what we've been seeing in 24 and 25, and that is less properties on market, and of course a lot of it's going to be on the demand side of things. You've just got a geopolitical issue over in the Asia Pacific region, and then it's game on again. Because that will influence our markets once you've got repatriation of expats, and also PR holders that are living abroad that can come back to the main capital cities and buy in Australia. They've got all the right in the world to buy because they've got PR. Just because they're not here doesn't mean that they can't buy. So all we need is something to happen in the Asia Pacific region, which is quite possible. There's a lot of talk about that. There's a lot more pain for buyers moving forward. But yeah, look, the question's still out there, right? Is 2026 going to buck the trend?
Yeah, and just on the rental stress, just to highlight, this is the data to the end of December. I'm just running the numbers to the end of January, which I'll publish shortly. It is the rental stress. So 3/4 of people in the rental sector have cash flow pressures. Half of those with a mortgage have cash flow pressures. So you're right. The rental story is actually the critical story. It doesn't get enough coverage in the mainstream media, of course, because, guess what? The mainstream media is very much coupled very largely to the property sector, and they're trying to convince people to buy. But actually, the rental stress, to my mind, is actually the pointy bit of all this. And it's fascinating to me that even the ABC doesn't really cover it as much as they should. For me, this is the real pointy bit of everything at the moment. And now, I know that the government provided extra rental assistance, so that's taxpayer money going to try and help some of the rental sector, but it's not enough to be able to actually deal with the significant pressure. And a lot of people in the rental sector are paying more than 50% of their net disposable income on the rent, sometimes a lot more. So it's a real, real shock. Now, talking about real shocks, Edwin, we should just briefly talk about the events over the weekend. So Bitcoin, gold and silver were a bit down. Like I said, my spies tell me that quite a few people were actually saying, maybe we'll translate from some of these assets into property. There's a little post here, which I thought was quite fascinating when it was talking about, maybe all of this leads to higher home prices.
Well, that's it. That's the predictions that we put up at the beginning of the year, and this is when you and I were talking earlier on, even before the show, as to where would that, now that they've had the jolt, from Bitcoin, from your Bitcoiners to your Silverians and your gold enthusiasts, they've had that little bit of a wake me up, a call. How many are going to say, hold on a minute, there's a little bit of volatility now, I might as well take my earnings whilst I can and not try to ride it all the way, because you don't know of the instability that's been creating and all the chatter globally. People are going to start moving towards property. And this is where, in my opinion, the desperate housewives are going to shine. Because they're the ones that are going to be pushing the partners, right, to go buy. But look, this is why you've got to take all these data points into account, and we have to take these data points into account. And when we talk to our clients, when we're looking for properties, and because we've become very familiar as to who's buying in what area, and we are, what are the demographics? Is it the Silent Tigers? Is it the WeChat chatterers? Is it the the Desperate Housewives? Is it the New Kids on the Block? Yeah, who's influencing the market in the region, the area, the suburb, the locality of the market in a suburb? Is it investors? And who are the investors? Who's influencing those markets? And they're the conversations that we have with the local real estate agents that are on the ground that pass on the informations with regards to what's happening at grassroots levels. So this is why we've got this. For me, this is just as much as I have a lot of fun at the beginning, and people get stirred up and get a little bit hot under the collar, from time to time, and we press those buttons. But look, this is the reality. It's a shift of asset class from one to the other, and this is what you've had in your conversations, what we're seeing ourselves, and what our clients are, the clients that we've brought on board, is what they've been telling us as well. Those that have come on board, and those that have been talking to us, and as to hence the reason why we're able to talk openly here and share. These are the real data points, in my opinion. You could call it hearsay, you could call it circumstantial, you could call it whatever you want to call it, but this is why we've got this. And then when you've got this market jolt, it just solidifies the predictions that we've had up there. So it's just a tracking a gauge as to what the predictions for 2026 are gonna pan out like.
Well, folks, you always hear it first here. Eventually the mainstream catch up. It might take them months or years. One of the things that we were speaking about some time ago was the lack of security around real estate agents' data. And guess what? The Guardian's now picked that one up, right? So this is actually the real estate agents in Australia using apps that leave millions of lease documents at risk, according to a digital researcher. And the Australian platforms used by real estate agents to upload documentation for renters and landlords are leaving people's personal information exposed in hyperlinks accessible online. Well, no surprise to us, Edwin.
No, it's not. It's no surprise. This is scary. This is really, really scary. And people, if our followers and our viewers are both landlords and tenants, I would be on the phone, and I would be calling the property managers, and I would be saying, listen, you better, I want to know where you've got my data. What program are you using? Are you outsourcing? But a lot of the services that property managers are providing now in order to cut costs have been sort of sent out to third party representatives anyway, which is scary. It is absolutely scary. When I closed the office down in 2017, when I closed the office down from doing property management we were already being approached by third-party service providers and say, we can make your life easier, blah, 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 blah. I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand it then, and I couldn't understand now as to why you would put your license, you would put the, this on the line. Because I could see, even back then, I could see the issues around it, and here we are. So when you and I were raised this years ago, and we only talked about recently last year again, we brought it to the attention of people because of what we could see, because of the ramping up of third party providers servicing the industry, and why there's a simple premise as to why they're doing it is to save costs, to save money, because then what they've done over the decades is our officers have done away with your seasoned property managers because they don't want to pay them what they're worth, and a lot of them are worth the weight in gold. And some of them are weightier than others, but they're worth the weight in gold. And And you could now say they're worth the weight in silver as well. But they don't want to pay because they want to cut costs because of the pain that a lot of officers are in. And this is why, again, I say that we are back to 2019 when officers were hemorrhaging. And 2026 is going to be a watch this space for the industry. Because I've got a prediction around that as well, that, in relation to officers. But saving money just puts tenants' information and landlord information in two areas that they shouldn't be placed into, and there's a lot of issues. So if you've got, I would, as I was saying earlier on, I would get on the phone and I would be talking to the property manager that's looking after my property, or that's managing the rental that you're in, and asking them, where is that data held? And if they can't give you a straightforward answer, I know companies that will, and I know companies all around Sydney, property management teams all around Sydney that will look after your best interest. And if you're a tenant, obviously you can't just get up and go, but you should reach out to to fair trading. You should start making a lot of noise, because when you talk about in this article, and what happened in WA, it is scary stuff, and that's just the beginning. Not to mention the fact that the cybersecurity regulations have really been tightening up. So property managers, if you're listening to the show, and if you're you better get your licensee in charge up to speed, because from my Eagle contacts, they tell me that breaches of cybersecurity compliance, it's averaging out at $400,000 for fines and for being negligent. So if you're a property manager, if you're a licensee in charge, you better get your ass into gear, and you better get your office in order, and start doing away with these third party service providers. Because one, you don't know where they're located, you don't know how secure that information is, and how it's being handled. It's crazy.
Yeah, very important, Edwin. Now let's move on to look at the numbers briefly. So in Sydney on the 26th, 20,351. Jump forward to the next week, the 2nd of February, 21,443. So listings are rising. And here is Edwin's chart that shows that, the way it's tracking, if you actually adjust for the lands, it's still not very strong, Edwin.
No, not as strong as what a lot of people would think it is, and even Catality and all these other reports are showing the fact that the numbers are still low. So this is our charts for our viewers. So it's still early days though. It's still early days, but we'll see. Melbourne is a different kettle. Melbourne's been adding almost 1,000 and more on average per week over the last couple of weeks, and Melbourne could hit the 30,000 mark even before we get into winter.
Yeah, from 26,000 to 27,797 over the week. Brisbane, very quiet a little bit on the 26th, 2,679. On the 2nd, 2,697. So, it's still, maybe it's to do with the Olympics, the Games. On the auction front, still very quiet, a little bit more this week, but still quite low numbers. And your chart really shows that they've been quite remarkably.
Yeah, and this is again what the mainstream aren't really picking up. They're talking about your 79% clearance rates, your 75% clearance rates. They're all beating their chest, but they're not talking about the fact that we're tracking numbers-wise, listings on market by way of auction. They're very low across in the region according to Domain, because these numbers are scraped from the Domain website. So it's and we've been tracking them for quite a number of years. So look, it's there. It's in what is it? It's in orange, blue, and white, and black. So,
Absolutely.
But we'll see.
Well, it's early days, but we'll keep tracking that. On the rentals in Sydney, 11,425 on the 26th, on 10,882 on the 2nd of February, so a drop. In Melbourne, 11,350 on the 26th. 11,032 on the 2nd of February. So again, a slight fall. The rental story is horrendous. And I don't think we're going to see any change on the rentals, unfortunately, Edwin. But as we come to the end of the show, you've got, well, an interesting observation and a tip for the week.
Well, look, my tip for the week is you're never too old to learn something something new or even start something new. If robots are going to take over the world, like we're told that these AI have created their own group, and thousands of AI agents have created this, what is it, Maltbot. I don't really understand the whole thing about AI and how it all works, but now they're talking to themselves and they've got their own little social media platform, and it's on. So the only way to counter that is as I say, you're never too old to learn something new. And but when I say you're never too old to learn something new or start something new, if you're in the field or if you think that you're going to be AI'd out of this, out of existence, in your work life existence, and you're going to be hitting retirement a lot earlier than what you would want to, you better start learning something you can do with your hands. It's still going to be a long way away from robots taking over the thing. So, and that's what I've made it a point in my life to try and learn something new, something new that I could do with my hands or start something new, whether it's a small project or something challenging. Not only to keep my mind active, but also to stay ahead of AI and all those little robots that are following behind.
Yeah, the robots are coming, Edwin, but as you say, we got to keep ahead of them. And, I think innovation, creativity, and try something new is always a good thing for the 2026, as any other new year. Edwin, always a pleasure chatting with you and getting the latest lowdown on the property. We'll do it all again next week. I hope you have a great week, and thanks for sharing the data.
Likewise, Martin. All the best. Take care.
Cheers.